Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Yin Wu of Dirt Protocol coming to us from Mountain View. How's it going, Yin?
It's going well. Thanks for inviting me, Nathan.
Yeah, glad to have you. This is fun. I'm excited to learn what you guys do because it's like, I won't say it's quite over my head, but it's like right hitting the top of my large forehead. So I want to hear what you guys are doing. So let's start off with that. Tell me what Dirt Protocol is.
So DIRT is a protocol for trusted data. We find a way for people to curate trust information where you may not want to depend on the source of that info. So one way to think of it is that it's actually really similar to a game of poker. If you want to share a piece of information, you need to have some skin in the game, some stake. All your components can know whether you're being honest based on maybe how much you're willing to put up to share this piece of information. But on the other side, if anyone says that, hey, I don't think you're being honest and that information you're sharing is not true, they can challenge you. They can also put up a stake. If there's a challenge, it goes to a vote, that anyone can vote on what is correct. So in this way, we create a system where you can have trusted data without depending on the source for that data. We make it economically irrational for there to be misinformation in the network.
Very interesting. Okay, very interesting. So I guess let's talk use cases and maybe your target customer. I can see this on like a Wikipedia or something like that, but what's sort of the most common scenarios or use cases where this applies?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very similar to Wikipedia for structured data. And the use case that we're starting with is curating trusted data for the cryptocurrency space. So we're working with cryptocurrencies, with blockchain companies. And what's interesting about this market is that cryptocurrencies have been on an insane tear the past year. You see the prices of so many tokens skyrocketing. There are companies raising funding through what's called an initial coin offering. An ICO is really similar to an IPO, except this whole market is completely unregulated. Mm-hmm. A lot of these projects are just raising $10, $30, $10, $20, $30 million on nothing more than really just a promise. So the question that we have is, well, if so many of these projects are raising funding, but you can't trust this information, is there a way in which you can instead incentivize them to be honest?
That's something I've had maybe one or two startups on this podcast that have done token sales. And one of the things that I still haven't been able to get my head around is like, you do a token sale, you get all this money. What's sort of auditing you to make sure you're spending it appropriately? Are you sort of addressing that? Like, how do I spend this, huge amount of money I just raised? Or
That's a great question, because you have a lot of because for a lot of these companies, they may have raised like $30 million really on little more than a promise. And I come from a standard startup world where maybe you raise $30 million, and that's a good size Series C. By that point, you have product, you have traction, you have something to show for, you have revenue.
Yeah.
That's different in the crypto world. You put up a white paper, you make some claims, and then you raise the funding.
Yeah.
So for us, we're starting with addressing, well, what is even objective information about these teams? So if a team is raising funding and they say that, well, we have this really famous computer scientist as an advisor, we have this really well-known investment firm as one of our investors, a lot of companies that I've come across have actually misrepresented that information. They list advisors who have never even heard about the project or investors who've never even heard about them.
Yeah. Oh, that makes total sense. So kind of verifying information I'm putting out there. But how about going forward? Let's take that scenario all the way through. So I'm doing a token sale. I'm using Dirt Protocol to kind of verify what I'm saying is true. Yeah. And then going forward after the token sale, where does this fit in?
So DIRT really works well for objective information that is verifiable and also has a commercial interest. So the question we often get asked is, well, really, where do you use DIRT? And there are situations where it's like Wikipedia works great without a token economic, because you don't need Wikipedia for most articles. But the articles where Wikipedia doesn't work as well for are those where you have an incentive to game the system. So if there's an article about obscure birds, nobody's trying to put false information about that article.
Sure.
But if there's an article for any given token, here is the wallet address where you can contribute money for that ICO. There's a really high incentive for you to spread false information because I could put my own wallet address and profit.
And your solution is any challenges goes to a vote, but can't votes kind of be gamed as well, or do you have some mechanism for that?
Right. So reputation is going to play a large part of it because you want to make it into a repeat game. A lot of behavior science research shows that if people know that their reputation is going to carry through in the future, they're much less likely to game the system. I would say also the other part is it becomes also expensive for you to try to game the system because if you're wrong and we're voting objective verifiable facts, then it's very easy for people to vote on the other side. I think the challenge that we're actually going to run into is not so much that we have a ton of people trying to game dirt, but rather the opposite problem, that no one cares enough about the network. No one cares enough about the information curation to try to game it. It'll be kind of similar to social network. When you first start a social network, your initial thought shouldn't be, how do I prevent spam on my social network? It's, how do I even get users to want to care enough to try to spam the site?
That's interesting. Okay, so let's talk about just kind of the genesis story. Where did you come up with this idea? Like, what were you doing before? Or what was the, you know, where'd this come from?
So I studied computer science at Stanford, and I dropped out to do my first company. At the time, didn't know any better, thought that might as well do a startup right out of school. So joined Y Combinator and worked on a company for 4 years. We were building a lock screen for Android phones. And then we were acquired by Microsoft to build out the Microsoft Launcher, Microsoft Lock Screen for Android. So I worked there for 4 years. And for my first company, when we were building it, one of the spaces that we were looking into when we were sort of in this pivot stage of what do we go next was looking into the blockchain space. And this was back in 2013. So I would say back in 2013, you really just had Bitcoin. And at the time we thought like, oh, it's probably too early. What are you going to do with this cryptocurrency? What are the uses for it? So decided to punt on that. And I remember looking more into space again last year. And now beyond just Bitcoin, you had Ethereum. You had decentralized applications. You had an Asian ecosystem coming on with Icon, with Neo. There was so much more that had been built out in the space. And it was fascinating to explore. So I started digging into the space, and like a lot of people, initially started by trading in the space. Mm-hmm. And when you start trading, you realize, whoa, there's a lot of misinformation, and it's really hard to know how can I make actually a informed decision about my trading decisions if accurate data isn't even available. And that's how we came to dirt.
Interesting. Is there a metaphor for your business in the traditional securities market that sort of makes sense? Or
yeah, absolutely. So I think it tends to be when you have a new financial market that emerges, you have an information network that comes up around the same time. So if you look at the public markets, there's Bloomberg.
Yeah.
If you look at private equity, there's PitchBook. For cryptocurrencies, this trusted source information doesn't exist. And there's also unique aspects to the cryptocurrency market that makes it hard for that information source to be centralized. It is unregulated. It is by default international. And the tokens that you're trading are, once you send it, there's no callbacks.
Yeah, interesting. No, those are good metaphors. It connects a lot of dots for me. And I guess the actual customer or business model, kind of both, is it someone doing a token sale or is it more on the buyers? Or I guess who's paying you?
Right. So the information could be related to ICOs. So these are projects that are doing token sales. It could be related to any project that's already out there. So information such as, like one example would be for any ERC-20 token, you have their smart contract address on Ethereum. If you're trading this token on a decentralized exchange, you need to know what the smart contract address is on Ethereum so you know you're trading the real token. But as I mentioned, there's no gatekeeper for the space. There's a token called Augur, but there's nothing to stop me from issuing another smart contract that looks identical to the Augur contract and calling it Augur and defrauding people into trading my fake version of that coin. So ICOs are really just a starting point, but this whole space, because it's by default decentralized, really needs a trusted information source even moving forward.
So who would ultimately pay at the end of the day then? What's the, yeah.
Yeah. So our business model is different. We're in the crypto space. So the value for DIRT really accrues to the protocol level.
Mm-hmm.
Our company will be issuing a fixed number of tokens. For us, we're going to hold a certain percentage of that tokens so that we can continue to support development of the protocol moving forward. The more data sets that are built on top of DIRT, the more people that use DIRT, the higher incentive it is for people to stake tokens to write to our data sets. So the tokens themselves accrue value.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So on that note, let's talk about fundraising and then I want to talk about those tokens too, but let's talk about fundraising. So you guys fairly recently raised a $3 million round. Is that correct?
We raised a $3 million seed round. That's correct.
And I was looking at PitchBook, the trusted source of data, as you mentioned, right. private equity. Pretty interesting group of investors, SV Angel, Eli Gill, et cetera. Was there a lead investor in that round or was it a party round?
We didn't have a lead investor, and also intentionally, because the way that the tokens are used in our network is you use tokens to share information. If I want to share that DIRT has raised funding from Elad Gill, I will stake tokens to say that. And then anyone looking at DIRT as a company can also trust that we actually have raised funding from Elad versus we're just saying and using Elad's name. So because tokens are used in the system for sharing information and also for voting and being a moderator, we don't want to give the perception to future users of the protocol that any one investor has a disproportionate stake, that they can gain the system by voting in a certain way. So we've intentionally brought on board a lot of investors like Elad, like SV Angel, like Greylock and General Catalyst that all share in this mission that we have of long-term, can you create these open data sets that are trusted, accurate, and also free to use?
Very interesting. So let's talk about putting together this round. How did you, when did you start fundraising? How did you kind of identify this list of, how many investors do you have? What's the number if you can share that?
We have around 10 investors.
10 investors.
Including and some additional angel investors on board.
Great. So maybe back up to when you're just starting off, you're like, all right, we think we've got something here. Let's go raise some money for it and take me through the kind of how.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's really tough. The first time that I fundraised for my last company, we went through Y Combinator and you have demo day.
Yeah.
So with demo day, you have such a good market dynamic. You go and pitch to a lot of investors. All the other investors know that you're talking to other investors. So they just come up to you. You're the pretty girl in the room. Here, we didn't have as much of a market dynamic. So the question was, how can you like drum up interest? Because for a lot of investors, I think the response that I personally dislike the most is, you're just a little too early. I think at the stage that we're raising at, your job as an investor is to bet on companies that are too early. A better response would be, we don't think the market is big enough, or maybe this isn't the right team for this space. Any number of things. But I think the phrase that you're too early is just, it gets to me as an entrepreneur.
But that's the bet, from the investor's perspective, that's the most optionality for future, stake at the game, right? If they say we don't believe in this market, you write them off. If they say too early, you might still come back to them, right? So it's got that optionality. That's why they say too early.
No, absolutely. I can understand why they say it. And it's funny because it's, well, you're too early. Why don't you come back to me later? Well, can you come back to me and show me 10 things? Show me that you're profitable. Show me that you have an emerging, a huge market, all of these other checklisted items. But once you get there, we probably wouldn't be raising at this valuation and also raising this amount.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, okay.
So for us, I mean, the way we thought about fundraising is really start with people that we already knew. Start with my network. Investors I've already been talking to, already have relationships with, because that's the easiest to get started. They're, I think at this stage, largely betting on you as an entrepreneur to build something. It's so early. We had an early product, but that's nowhere near where we needed it to be to actually ship it publicly.
So did you raise money for the YC company and did you go back to those guys first or what?
The space was so different that I think we're lucky in that because I'd already been had already knew that I wanted to start another company after I left Microsoft. I've been actively going to meetups, meeting potential investors, meeting engineers in this space. So for a lot of the relationships for my first email, for my first call, it was to people that already knew me and were willing to take the bet on me. I would say with investing, it really is it's a drudge where I do remember back in the YC days, going into some of these dinners and you're walking and you're like, ugh, that meeting didn't go well. And then you look to the guy to the left of you and you can tell they feel like the same emotion. So there's kind of that nice camaraderie of going through it together. In this case, I got more no's than I did get yeses.
So start with your own network. Did you kind of say, hey, we're raising money, or did you just sort of start socializing this idea of what you're doing without, you know, explicitly saying you're actually raising money? Like, was it a overt?
You get, so a couple of things. For people that you already know, you reach out to them and say, hey, this is what I'm building, and here's a deck for what we're working on. And then for people that you want to get access to, but you don't have a one-degree connection, go through a warm intro. For most of these investors, the way to think about from their perspective, they get hundreds of companies trying to pitch to them. So to weed through the noise, a strong intro can go far.
Did you make a list of like every crypto blockchain investor out there and then kind of work through your network to find those connection paths or what?
Yeah, so we made a list of not just the cryptocurrency investors, but investors that we knew had a really strong reputation and that we wanted to work with. Greylock is one of the largest investors in Coinbase. General Catalyst, they are one of the largest investors in Circle, which acquired Poloniex. Elad Gil has been a good friend actually for years. I knew him back when I was at Stanford. And Elad is such a prolific angel investor, and SV Angel has a reputation second to none. So we didn't want to focus just on investors in the cryptocurrency space, but rather investors that we knew would have the founders back, and that would also be a value add.
Awesome. Is SV Angel, is that Ron Conway these days, or is it his son Topher? Who's running SV Angel these days?
Now I think it's mostly Topher, and it was Ron, but Topher nowadays.
Interesting. So you made a list of crypto and generally well-regarded investors, tapped your network to find those one degree of communication. And did you run like a formal process, or was it a more longer drawn out fundraising? What was the sort of, you know, day-to-day tactical look like?
So it took us maybe about a month and a half to do a fundraise. I would say it's fairly quick for doing a 3 million seed from start to end. And you want to, my advice would be try to get it done in as short as a time as possible, since if you let it drag out for too long, then you're the deal that's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And people also wonder, why haven't you gotten enough funding? The ramp up for us was really, really, really hard and then really, really easy. Once you kind of reach this tipping point where enough investors are in, then you can say, look, 80% of our round is filled. Do you want to come in? So for us, we ended up getting 3x oversubscribed and had to turn away many investors by the end of it.
So talk about that a little more. Like, the ramp up was really hard. Then once you hit that tipping point, it got easy. What was the hard part? And how did you, because getting that tipping point is the magic point, right? Like, that's the momentum shifts in your favor. You can kind of control it. But getting to that tipping point is always the hard part. So if you have any more insights as to that, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one is you have to go out and pound the pavement. Try to order the investors so that you go from ones that you are, because when you first started pitching, I could even tell for my pitch to these investors, it was pretty raw at the beginning. You just get better the more times that you do it. So stack it so that for the early investors you talk to, maybe those are the friendliest ones that you have the existing relationship with. So they're more forgiving. And for the ones in which you really want to get, approach them at the end when your pitch by that point is more nailed down. Mm-hmm. I'd say there's really no substitute to pounding pavement. The other is take the feedback that you get from these investment sessions and figure out how do you iterate and how do you improve upon it. So for us, one of the questions we commonly got was, well, so what if someone acquires a lot of tokens in this network? Could they just game the system? I wrote down a list of all the commonly asked questions and try to answer them in as succinct way as possible so that for the next meeting, you are more prepared.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. How many pitch meetings, because a month and a half is fast. How many pitch meetings were you having per day, per week, whatever the metric is? And was it just you doing the fundraise, or did you have a couple co-founders doing it? Or
I'm a solo founder, so it was just me doing the fundraise. And I would say logistically maybe had two or three pitch meetings a day, but usually it was only one. The hard part is just managing your own psyche. I don't think that's easy for anyone, but you come back and if you get, someone tells you no, and this is your baby because it's your startup, you've been working on it, and you think, oh, how could they not see how brilliant this idea is? It sucks. There's no way really around it. So being able to manage your own psyche, and for me, it was remembering that you really only need one investor to say yes. It's the same as dating in some ways. You don't need every boy or girl that you go on a date with to say yes, since you only are going to marry one person.
Sure. Yeah. If you're willing to share, and you don't have to, you can always pass on this question, but who was the first yes? And then once you got a yes, did you do anything with that yes to kind of build up the frenzy?
For us, actually, the first two yeses really got us going, which was, one was Linda Shea. Linda is at Scalar Capital. She was an early employee at Coinbase, and then gave us a lot of strong intros to investors that she tend to co-invest in. And the second yes that was a strong signal value for us was Fred Ersham. So Fred Ersham is a co-founder of Coinbase. So to have his name and to know that he's on board, that was, again, a strong signal for other investors. One piece of advice I've heard is that for a lot of investors, what you have to do is get their greed to overcome their fear.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Great. Touch on that a little bit. Like, how did you do that? Were you just showing the potential market size and how big this could be? How do you do that?
You talk to them about how big the potential market size is. You also, for a lot of these investors, especially in the Valley, they missed out on the first rally for crypto. For many of these cryptocurrencies, I think if you were trying to raise funding and doing a blockchain or crypto company, maybe 2 years ago, you would have gotten no from nearly every tier one investors. So they recognize that that's their mistake. And the lever to pull on there is you don't want to miss out on the next wave.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So a lot of times, I mean, for Sequoia, they're very, Sequoia is not one of our investors, but one of the things that they're very strong on is the market. They want to pick the right market and make multiple bets on strong founders in that market.
Did you get many investors just almost saying, you know, I just don't buy the whole crypto space? Like, did you get many just blanket, like, almost bearish on the whole crypto space? Was that very common, or is everyone sort of like, yeah, we know this is it? I don't know. Yeah.
No, I think that's pretty common. So for us, it's also a little different because we're not just building a protocol as some of these companies are doing. My background is product engineering. For us, we have a very clear use case for our protocol. So that helped cross some of the chasm. But then for the investors, I still didn't get it. Because at the core, you have to believe in crypto. You have to believe in blockchain. You have to believe that cryptocurrencies will be a trend. The way that I looked at it is that if you didn't even believe in Bitcoin, it would be nearly impossible for me to get them on board as an investor. Yeah. So in that case, it really wasn't us. It wasn't a good fit for their investment thesis for the company that we wanted to build.
Yeah, of course. Awesome. So let's see, staying down in the weeds for a minute or two more. You know, you got Linda and Fred saying yes. Did you use those yeses to further whip up the other folks you're talking to?
And when you talk to the next investor, say Linda and Fred are in. And the other point I would say is that I spent a good amount of time getting feedback on the deck that's passed around. So to your point, I think crypto can be a convoluted topic. It's hard to grok your mind around what is it that you're actually doing. So one of the differentiators for us is that I think we wanted to make it really clear that the product that we're building is not just a academic research. It has a clear application and to work on communicating that in a way so that most investors could understand.
Cool. Okay. Any tips on... Actually, this is a question I had. It's a party round. So was it a priced round, or was it a safe or a convertible note? Did someone set up a valuation? How do you do that with a party round like this?
So for us, what we did was we raised them both a SAFE as well as a SAF. So SAF is for future token, because we are in the cryptocurrency space.
Okay, that's great. So actually, maybe I know what a SAFT is, but maybe just define a SAFT, and then we'll go into a little more for anyone who doesn't know.
So SAFT is an agreement for future tokens, and investors help support us now so that they can acquire tokens in the future.
And so like the 3 million, you're carving this up. Is it, does everyone get, you know, 50% SAFE and 50% SAFT, or is it sort of dependent on each investor to pick which instrument? How does this work in practice?
So it really was up to the investors, and partly it's that this, I mean, one of the things I spend so much time on with this company that's different is the regulatory environment for this space is still more uncertain than I would say for traditional. So if you go through YC, everyone raises on the same instrument, you do a SAFE, and it's fairly standard. Here, there's definitely, you spend more time with your lawyers to figure out, okay, what is regulatorily compliant? There's this question of a security versus utility token. Yeah. For us, we strongly believe that our tokens are utilities, but still want to make sure that we're, you know, crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's so that when the SEC reviews our project, they also have the same perspective.
I'm not an expert, but from what you've described, it sounds about as much of a utility as any that I've heard, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah. So you have my vote that it's a utility, right? Not a
security. I appreciate it.
Sure. Interesting. So, but I guess, is it, you know, back to sort of like the actual carving off X amount of the money was in the form of a SAFT and X was in SAFE, or was it some hybrid?
So it was for different.
A hybrid like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's different for some investors. So for some investors, because the space is so new, their funds weren't even set up to be able to accept tokens.
Okay.
So if that's the case, they invested through a SAFE. And for others, they were able to invest in SAFT.
Gotcha. Okay. And then how about, since staying on the kind of party round for a minute, how do you close this party round? I guess you were oversubscribed. And so then you just said, hey, we're oversubscribed. We're going to close this by, you know, a certain date, and anyone who's in is in, or what? How do you close?
Yeah, it? We had a deadline on timing. It's also like when I think near the end of it, when you're fundraising, it feels nice. It's like, oh man, it was so hard in the beginning. Now we have this attraction. Now it feels like people actually believe in this idea and it feels great. But on the other side, you also know that doesn't mean anything yet. The fundraising is only the start. It is nowhere near the end. I think it's the same with press and PR. So when we announced our funding round and got coverage in TechCrunch and Forbes and Business Insider and VentureBeat, we got a lot of positive tweets saying, congrats, you guys are doing awesome. That's not success yet. The hard part is still by far to come. So for us, once we had raised enough, we could close the funding round because the focus needs to be on building.
Yeah. As you said, the hard part's, you know, getting people to care enough to use it, right? And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's also going back to our early conversation, I think the hard part of doing a startup with any of this is managing your own psyche through the entire process.
Any interesting tips that you do for managing your own psyche? I don't know, meditation or yoga or walking the dog or any hacks for that?
Mm-hmm. I wish I could say yes, because I'm always want to do those things like work out, meditate. And I try to, but definitely don't have a regular schedule there.
You just deal with it. You just deal with it. Got it. On the oversubscribe bit, you said 3 times oversubscribe, which is amazing. So how do you pick who to let in when you have, like, you know, so much, such a nice problem to have, right? When you have so much extra demand.
Yeah. So on the other side, now that you have investors, this is where the reputation of the investor really carries through. And I think Silicon Valley is unique in that everyone wants to help each other, because you know that in the future, it could be that you have a company that goes from 0 to 1 billion in a year. And that has happened a number of times. So there's incentive for you to be a good person in the Valley. For us, it was looking at the list of investors and thinking about who do we think can add value? Who have we heard positive for entrepreneurs who've worked with them? Who have we heard positive feedback about?
Yeah. And how do you let let the other people down? And did you just say, hey, sorry, we're oversubscribed. I can't get you in this round. I've never asked this question. How do you tell an investor no, right?
And I think a lot of times it's it could be that we do it in a way so that we also want to look forward and see, hey, we can't get you into this round, but if the company is successful, we are going to do subsequent rounds and we'll love to keep in touch. And if there's any way that we can help you as you're looking at other companies in the space, do let us know. It works both ways. We've been rejected and also doing the rejecting part. But I think for me, it's how can I maintain the relationship moving forward?
Yeah. After you were sort of oversubscribed, did any of those folks that had rejected you come back and say, hey, we changed our mind, let us in? Like, there's always that. It's the fear of missing out, right? That's so strong.
In Silicon Valley. Yeah, in some parts. We did not have that.
No. So speaking of future rounds, it sounds like, if I'm reading between the lines, you're planning a token sale at some time. Will that be the next round, perhaps?
So I think we're still trying to figure it out. I mean, the goal with a token distribution is to get our tokens in the hands of as many users as we can so that people can contribute data to DIRT, people can vote and be a good moderator and earn tokens for moderation. The question is, how do we do it in a way so that we can give tokens to users, whether it's a token distribution, whether we figure out some ways that we're still, the reason I'm not going into details yet is we're still kind of working with our lawyers to figure out what is it that we can do. But our goal is to be able to give users tokens so that they can use it on the network.
Okay, got it. So just thinking about future fundraising, are you thinking, are you already thinking about it, or maybe you're not even thinking about it yet, but are you thinking of another
round? Yeah, I think that's interesting because, I mean, the goal of fundraising is that you get funding to build a product. The flip side is that we could also be profitable and not need to do a subsequent round of fundraising. That would be the ideal. The easiest way to fundraise is if you don't need a fundraise. In the same way that companies don't get bought, companies don't get sold, they get bought. Mm-hmm. So if we have the leverage and our company is able to create a successful protocol and have a lot of data sets on the protocol, a lot of people using it, then the value of the tokens the company holds will increase. And that would enable us to be in a stronger position to fundraise.
Okay, cool. One or two more questions. I'll let you get back to it. But, you know, kind of rewinding the clock, you went through YC, so you had some training there. In the fundraising, is there anything you would do differently? Or, you know, if you counsel your younger self about fundraising, is there anything you would advise? Anything we haven't covered?
That's a great question. Yeah, I would say the main piece of advice is to keep going. If you believe in this idea, it's okay if you get no's. Remember that I would remind my younger self that for many of these successful companies, they've gotten no's. And that's all right. That's not an indication of whether your company is going to be successful.
Yeah, good. I think it was my favorite sort of anecdote of that is Pandora, where he was rejected like 348 times or something.
Yeah.
By investors, right?
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a public company.
Investors aren't always right.
Cool. All right. Last thing, if people want to learn more, it's dirtprotocol.com or .org.
dirtprotocol.com, and then you can also find us on Twitter at dirtprotocol, and I'm also on Twitter at yin yin wu.
Cool. Anything you want to plug, any call to action for any listeners that they should check out, anything you're like hiring for, or just check out dirtprotocol.com?
So we just talked about fundraising, and the goal of fundraising is so that we can hire. So now that we've closed a round, we are hiring engineers. If anyone wants to work in the blockchain space and work with a team that has built and delivered products before, they should definitely go to Dirt Protocol, send me an email, send me a tweet, and reach out, because we are looking for more engineers to join the team.
Is it crazy hard to hire engineers for blockchain? I mean, it's such a hot market, and there's probably not that many with experience. Is it super hard?
It's a little bit of both, because we're now looking for blockchain engineers. We're looking for full stack developers that want to learn about a new space, because it's sort of like you said, no one has 10 years of experience doing blockchain development. The pro is that the space is crazy hot, so lots of people want to get in the space. The con is that it's you also have a lot of teams, I would say, that may not be the best teams to join.
Interesting. So check out dirtprotocol.com. All right, Ian, thank you so much. This is fun. Lots of good stuff here. I've learned a lot. So we'll catch you after the next round or the next token sale, whatever happens next, okay?
Awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah.